plugged my little iPad in over the weekend, but I forgot to plug it into the wall. Doesn't work that way. Electricity just doesn't work that way. We're going to talk for the next few weeks. We're going to do some things. You remember Paul Harvey? Some of you do remember Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey always had a section at the end of his program where he said, "And now the rest of the story." And so he would tell a story. Sometimes he would tell you who he was talking about. Sometimes he wouldn't tell you who he was talking about. And then he would get to the end of it and he'd say, "And now the rest of the story." And he would give you the moral to whatever story he was talking about. And I want to do some biblical characters for a few weeks and talk about them and their lives and talk about the rest of the story. Because there's so much there for us to see as we do that. And we're going to begin with Joseph. I don't know if you're aware of this, but for 400 years, Joseph was the hero of the Israelites. There was no one they thought more of than Joseph. There was no one they could have possibly thought more of. Joseph was the one who saved the people, and he brought them into Egypt. Now, I'm sure there was a time when they weren't so happy about that, when they were slaves. But during the time that they prospered in Egypt especially, it was because of Joseph and what he did. And we're going to talk about Joseph, and we're going to talk about him in that way. He was Rachel's firstborn son. He was the 11th son of his father Jacob. Of all the sons, he's preferred by his father, who gave him a multicolored coat or a fancy coat of some kind. If you go back and look at the scholars, they've got pages and pages and chapters and entire books that have been written about the meaning of the term multicolored coat, and whether it was a long coat or whether it was a fancy coat or whether it was a bejeweled coat or whether it was just a multicolored coat, nobody really knows for sure. I think Dolly Parton had it right when she said a coat of many colors, and I'll take that as I think about it there. He's an important figure in biblical history, as we said. His jealous brother sold him into slavery. We know that. He ends up incarcerated in Egypt. And after correctly interpreting the dreams of Pharaoh, he rises to power in Egypt and rescues his people during a famine. His family comes there and ends up settling there. And that basically takes us to the Exodus after Joseph dies. That's pretty much what happens. And so I guess you could, Judd, you can go ahead and sleep to the rest because you need your rest. We'll do that. Although I do have a timeline at the end. You need to wake up for that. We look at Joseph and his family as he's born and as he's raised. And Joseph is the son of Jacob and Rachel. We know that. He lived in the land of Canaan until he was 17 years old. We know that because the scripture is very clear. When he's 17, his father sends him out into the field to check on his brothers. Now, how old is his father at that time? Anybody have any ideas? I'll show you later when we look at the timeline. But his dad's about 108 years old when this happens. That's about how old his dad is when this happens. He's 17. His dad's about 108 years old. And his dad loves him. Now, he's got a younger brother. And he's got all these older brothers. And he goes out and he checks on all of these brothers. And they're not behaving like they ought to behave. And they're not doing what they're supposed to do. He brings back a bad report. We understand all that. He goes to the brothers and he shares with them a dream about his sheep standing up in the field and theirs bowing down. And they were not happy about that. They were not happy about that. Here's the things they're looking at. Number one, your daddy's favored already. We're out here working. You're 17 years old and you're still sitting at home. You know, you ought to be out here working with us. Number two, dad gave you a fancy coat and we smell like sheep. You come prancing in here and we've been working all this time. We look like sheep. We're covered with all the toil of our work, and you come prancing in here with your fancy coat on, and now you say, "We're going to bow down to you." Now, that's enough to make most brothers upset, I guess. It was for them specifically and particularly. And then he gives them a second dream. It's not enough that he gives them one dream that they're going to bow down. He said, "Well, wait, I had another dream." In the second dream, he says, "You know, I saw the sun and the moon and the 11 stars up in the sky. And they all bowed down to my star." Well, that was enough to really upset them. Even their dad got a little upset about that. And he says, "Am I and your mother going to bow down?" Now, that's symbolic when he says that, because Joseph's mother was already dead by this time. She died with the birth of Benjamin. He had 11 brothers already, so she was already passed by the time this happens. But it's symbolic that the father and mother would bow down to Joseph, and their stars would bow down. and the brothers would bow down. And they didn't like that at all. They didn't like that at all. In fact, they didn't like it so much that they plotted against Joseph. The brothers began trying to figure out, what can we do? And so they decide, hey, let's kill him. Let's kill this dreamer, is the way the New King James puts it. Let's kill this dreamer, and we'll get rid of him, and he won't be around anymore. And so they plot all these plots, and they decide, hey, we'll throw him in a pit. You know, that's what we'll do. We'll throw him in a pit, and we'll sell him off. Or actually, we'll throw him in a pit, and then we'll kill him. But as they throw him in the pit, or after they throw him in the pit, they throw him in there. It's a cistern, and it's empty at the time. So they're not worried about him drowning when they throw him in there. They know he's going to be there when he comes back. And Reuben goes along with it because he says, hey, after they've done this and they get over their initial madness, I'll come rescue the boy and I'll take him back to his dad. Reuben's not a part initially of their plot, but he goes along with it. And when he advises that he would do something, they didn't know that. They didn't know Reuben was going to do that. And so they went about their business, and they acted about it, their business. And so they stripped him of his tunic. They throw him in the pit. And they wait, and they wait, and they wait. And they sat down to eat a meal. Didn't bother them a bit that Joseph's sitting over here in a pit. They knew what their plans were when they finished that meal. It was the Last Supper, but it wasn't for them. It was Joseph's Last Supper as far as they were concerned. And they were going to take care of that. They were going to put him to death. But about that time, some Midianites came along, Ishmaelites. And the Ishmaelites came along and they said, hey, why should we kill our brother when we can get some spending money? And so they decided to sell him into slavery. Most of us are familiar with this story. For most of us, this is just a rehash of a story we've heard many times. And we need to hear it. We need to be reminded of it. For some, it's a kind of a new story. They might not have heard the whole story, so we want to go through the whole story as we look at this. They decide, hey, we'll sell him to these traders. And when we do, these Ishmaelites, these Midianites, when we sell him to them, then we won't have to worry about him anymore because his blood won't be on our hands. Nope, we didn't kill him. All we did was sell him away. But then they had to go back to Dad. And they had to explain to Dad, where's Joseph? So they took his coat. They killed a young kid of the goats. They smeared the blood on the coat. They took the coat back to his dad. If you'll notice, they do not say to their dad, our brother's been killed and we found his coat. No, they say to their dad, we found his coat. Does it belong to your son? And their dad says, oh my goodness, my son's been killed. And he assumes the worst, and they allow him to assume the worst. Now, in the tradition of the peoples of the time, they technically didn't lie to their daddy. In the traditions of the people of our time, we might tell things like this and say, well, I didn't actually lie. Did they lie to their dad? They deceived him, did they not? They intentionally deceived him. When we intentionally deceive, it doesn't matter if the words we say are actual lies or just around the edges with the intent to deceive. There's a lesson here for us to learn, and I think we need to learn that as we go through these things, that we need to see the lessons that are there to be learned. So they go on about their business and their lives. Meanwhile, Joseph is taken to Egypt, and he's sold into the house of Potiphar. And Potiphar recognizes Joseph as, number one, probably an attractive young man. We don't know that for sure, but that's the way a lot of young men rose to prominence in those days. Having some skills. God blessed him, and Potiphar puts him over his entire household. We don't know how long this period takes. We don't know whether it's days or whether it's months or whether it's a few years, during which time he shows himself to be quite profitable to Potiphar as a servant. And so Potiphar puts him in charge of everything except for his own wife. And then the wife says, hey, Joseph, you're kind of cute. That's where I get the idea. Maybe he was attractive looking is one of the reasons why Potiphar promoted him over others. If you're going to have somebody in your house around you all the time, you don't want somebody that's really ugly like Igor. You want somebody that's really handsome standing around you to make you look better, right? Maybe, I don't know. But apparently that's what happened. He's in the house. She is a wonderful lady. She's known throughout history, if you read your Bible, as being one of the finest women. No, that's not true. Potiphar's wife wants Joseph to sleep with her. And she wants it so desperately that she keeps after him day after day after day. And Joseph keeps telling her no, and he turns her down, and he turns her down, and he turns her down. Finally, one day, as she's grabbing at him in desperation, he runs away. She keeps his coat in her hands, and she sits there, and she's like, what do I do now? And she comes up with this terrible plot, because she's been scorned by this young man. And so she says, help! And she calls the servants in, and she says, he tried to rape me, and I grabbed his clothes, and he ran away. That's what she says. Potiphar comes in and has Joseph thrown in prison. Now, I think Potiphar might have known the truth, because Potiphar didn't have Joseph killed. I think Potiphar might have had a good idea what's going on, because he didn't throw him into the lowest dungeons of the prison. He threw him into the prison where the king's prisoners were kept. He put him in a special place. So I think he may have had an indication about what was going on, but his wife's honor was at stake, and his home life and peace and stability was at stake because of what his wife had said. So I think he did that, acting in reaction to what she did. And so we see Joseph in prison. He's in prison, and the warden, again, we don't know exactly how much time this passes here. The warden of the prison, the jailer, looks at him and realizes, hey, this guy's been doing a good job in Potiphar's house. This guy has been very responsible. Does it sound like maybe Potiphar had told him about Joseph when he put him in prison? Because the warden puts Joseph in charge of the prison. And Joseph is in charge, and everything prospers as he's in charge of the prison, and we look at this and we see it. I think the jailer probably knew Joseph was innocent. I think Potiphar might have known that Joseph was innocent when he put him in there. But nonetheless, they put him in there. Eventually, they bring in the king's cupbearer and the king's baker. Again, these are high-ranking officials that are put into the cell with Joseph. He's not in with the lowest of the low prisoners. He's not in with the regular rapists and murderers and thieves. He's in with the king's own servants. We see that, and they're there with him, and they're all terrified because they're all in prison. They know something's going on, and so they have dreams. The dreams go something like this. The cupbearer says, I had a dream, and there was a vine, and there were three bunches of grapes, and I squeezed the grapes into a cup, and I gave them to the king. And Joseph said, oh, I can tell you what your dream means. Your dream means that in 3 days, the king is going to lift you back up, and you're going to go back to your job of serving him. And the baker thought, hey, that sounds pretty good. Let me tell you about my dream. I dreamed I had loaves of bread, and the birds came down and started eating them. There were three loaves, and the birds came down and started eating them. And he says, oh, your dream's not that good. In 3 days, the king's going to lift you up, and he's going to hang you. I'm sure he wasn't happy about the interpretation of his dream. I'm sure that the cupbearer was more than happy then about his dream. And Joseph tells him, hey, when you get back to Pharaoh, tell him about me. And so he did, right? No, he didn't. He got back to Pharaoh. He was happy to be back with Pharaoh. He forgot all about Joseph. I mean, after all, you don't want to bring up who your prison roommates were, right? Not in the presence of the king. And so he doesn't do anything like that. And once he's installed in office, he's forgotten all about Joseph until Pharaoh has a dream. Pharaoh has this dream about seven fat cows, and they're huge fat cows, and he looks at them, and then there's seven skinny cows that come up out of the water towards them, and the skinny cows start eating the fat cows, and it bothers him. It bothers him so much that he can't sleep. It bothers him so much that he doesn't know what to do, and he has another dream, and there were seven really good ears of grain, and then they were followed by seven really, really skinny ears of grain. And he doesn't know what to do. He calls his magicians together. He calls all his soothsayers together. He calls all his wise men together. He gets them all together. And he says, what do the dreams mean? And they're like, I don't know. And all of a sudden, the cupbearer says, I forgot, but there's this guy, there's this Hebrew prisoner down here in the prison, and he can interpret dreams. And so Pharaoh had him send for him. And Joseph comes in. It's been 2 years that the cupbearer has been restored by this time. So he's been down there for 2 years. The cupbearer's forgotten all about him. The cupbearer is just trying to go on with his life. All of a sudden, now there's a crisis. Now he remembers him. So he brings Joseph to Pharaoh. That's my favorite Pharaoh of all the movies. I just thought he was a great Pharaoh. But he brings Joseph to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's advisors can't do it. And Joseph is brought in there, and Joseph, that's my second favorite Pharaoh, Joseph explains the dreams to Pharaoh. He said, I can't do it, but God can reveal your dreams to you. And he tells him, your dreams are the same. There are going to be 7 years of plenty. It's going to be so plentiful, you've never seen anything like it. It's going to be so plentiful, you're going to have overflow of plenty. It's going to be amazingly abundant. And then it's going to be 7 years that are going to be so bad, you're going to forget about all those record harvests. It's going to be 7 years that's going to be so terrible, the famine's going to be so bad, nobody's even going to remember that 7 solid years you had the greatest amount of blessings you've ever had before. And so he tells him that, and that's the dream that he gives to him. And Pharaoh comes up with this great idea. He says, you know, he says, you're the smart guy. You're the one that can interpret the dreams. You're the one that knows what's going on. He says, you'll be over my house and over the people and over everybody. And it really came down to the point where everybody in Egypt had to answer to Joseph. Everybody in Egypt had to answer to Joseph. Because he was the wise man. He was second in command, appointed by Pharaoh to be the seer, I think is the way you pronounce that word, the seer, of all of Egypt. And he was the guy, and everybody came to him, and it says that people came straight to Joseph if they needed anything. He was somebody. He was somebody. And so he passed out a mandate, and he says, hey, here's what's going to happen. He says, I want you to save. And they built storehouses, and they stored up, and they saved, and they saved, and they stored, and they saved, and they stored, and they saved, and they stored, till they had a huge surplus everywhere stored up. If you look back historically, we can see that during this period of time in history, the country of Egypt was building large storehouses. They've been uncovered through the years. We've found those great storehouses that were built during those time frames. But then the famine came. And the famine was so bad that people started to go hungry. And as they started to go hungry, the famine continued throughout the land and through the foreign lands till everyone was coming to them for grain. The people of Egypt sold their animals. They sold their lands. They sold themselves. Everything they could do to get food to eat. And so Pharaoh eventually owned all the people as slaves. He owned all the land, and he owned all of the produce. And so Joseph passed a law that lasted all the way up until the time of Moses that said that since you're farming on government land, you're going to give 20% of everything to the Pharaoh. And the Pharaohs became very rich as a result of Joseph's plan that he put into play way back when. But it wasn't just a famine in Egypt. It was a worldwide famine. And the famine affected those in Canaan as well. And so what happens is, Joseph's dad sends his brothers to him. And the first of his dreams is fulfilled when they came and they bowed down to him. And they asked for grain. They asked for grain. They didn't recognize him. He's been gone 23 years or so. We know that he was, well, we know for sure that Joseph was 17 when he was kidnapped by his brothers and sold into slavery. We know that he was 30 when he began working for Pharaoh. We know that there were 7 years of famine. We know that we're in the middle of the next 7 years of famine. So Joseph is somewhere close to 40 years old when his brothers come to him. And when they come to him, and he's close to 40 years old, they haven't seen him since he's 17, they don't recognize him. And two, with his power, with his trappings of office, he looks like someone else. But somehow or other, they manage to get into the room of this magistrate, and they go before him, and they kneel before him, and he starts questioning them, but he doesn't let them know he can speak Hebrew. And so they tell him about, they were the brothers of one father, and all this. He said, no, you're not. You're spies. You're spies. You came here to spy out the land so that you can invade. Now, okay, we know there's only 70 of them because later on it tells us how many of them came in. There's only 70 of them total. They weren't invading anybody. Joseph knew that too. Joseph was giving them a hard time maybe, or maybe he was trying to get to a point. I don't know. I don't know how hard his heart was at this point. I know that it's soft at another point, so I assume it was soft there as well as he did this. And so he lets them buy grain, but he asks them about their father, and he asks them, was there another brother? And they said, well, we left one little brother at home, Benjamin. We left him at home. And he said, no, you really are spies. Unless you bring him back, I'm going to know you're spies. And so he keeps one of the brothers. He gives them their grain, and he sends their grain back with them, and he puts their money bags, has their money bags put back in the top of their sacks, and they get underway, and when they get part of the way along the way, they find the money bags in their sacks, and they're afraid. They're very afraid to go back. They tell their dad what's going on. So we went there, we got food, and the man said, have you got another brother? How's your dad? And all those things. And they said, we have to bring our brother back. And the dad said, nope, that's not going to happen. Jacob did not want to lose another son. He'd already lost Joseph. And so they tried to convince him. He wouldn't be convinced. Finally, the famine was so severe, they had to have even more food. And so he says, go back and take the money and buy some more. And they said, we can't do it. He won't see us. And he said, well, take twice as much money. Take the money that was put back in your bags and the money you need now to buy grain and go back and nope, we won't go without our brother. He finally agrees to let them take Benjamin with them. And they get back. Joseph meets with them. He talks with them a little bit. He questions them about what they've been doing. They said, here's our brother. He's excited about that. We know that. He's not talking Hebrew. He doesn't want them to know who he is. And so he says, fill their sacks, put all their money in it, and take my silver cup, and put my silver cup in the bag of the youngest. And so the servants did so. And as soon as they left, maybe the end of the day, maybe they got a day's journey, maybe they got 2 days' journey, maybe they just got barely outside the city limits, Joseph sends the servant to look for them. And when the servants look for them, they start looking, they say, hey, you know, is it not enough that my master was so good to you, you had to steal from him too? They're like, nobody stole. They said, if anybody stole, if that silver cup is found in the possession of any one of us, let that person be a slave to your master forever. That's what the brothers said, because they knew they hadn't stolen. And so the servant began looking through their sacks, and when he got to the sack of Benjamin, he finds the silver cup. And they go back, and they realize that Benjamin is about to be taken away. The brothers of Joseph, mean enough to sell him into slavery, mean enough to plot to kill him, mean enough to have forgotten all about him for all of these years that he's been gone, and willing to say, sir, take me in place of my brother, because if you take my brother, it'll kill my dad. That's what Judah said. That's what Judah said. I think we need to recognize that even though these brothers were jealous, even though these brothers weren't always righteous, their hearts, in general, were in a pretty good place most of the time. And it's evidenced here, the true heart of Judah. It's kind of amazing. Joseph looks around later. He's excited. He's reunited with his family. Brings them, tells them to go get their dad and bring him back, bring all their family back, sends them all the provisions they need. They bring the 70 folks come in from Palestine, and they all come and they settle in the land of Goshen, and they're there. And in chapter 50, Jacob dies, and Joseph is about to die. And when they get ready for that time to come, the brothers, when they realize that Jacob is dead, say, hey, wait a minute. Now Joseph will exact vengeance on us, because they still wonder, when's the other shoe going to drop? He's been so kind to him so far. They worry about that. And they go to him and they say, our father, before he died, he said, hey, make sure your brother treats you well. And I'm pretty sure Joseph probably wept again, although the scriptures don't say that, because he had no such intention to be harmful or harsh to them. Joseph said to him, do not be afraid. Mind the place of God. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And I think there's an important lesson there for us today. I think it's very important for us to see that today. Joseph lived to the ripe old age of 110. You know, that seems to be a really long time today. He saw his great-great-grandchildren, and that's pretty cool, or his great-grandchildren anyhow. But before he died, he made the children of Israel swear that when they left the land of Egypt, they'd carry his bones with them. He made them a promise that 400 plus years later, they would remember when they left during the Exodus. Joseph made them a promise. You're not going to be here forever. We've still got a land that's been promised to us by God, and we're going back to it at some point. They understood that. They remembered the oath. They took him back. Joshua 24 and 32 tells of Joseph's burial in the very place where he had asked to be buried. So how old was he? If he was 110 when he died and he was 17 when he was kidnapped, that means he spent about 93 years in Egypt. That's what it means. It means he spent about 93 years in Egypt. That's our timeline that we're looking at here. When Jacob got to Egypt, we know that Jacob was 130 years old because Genesis 47:9 tells us that. Genesis 41:46 says Joseph was 30 when he entered Pharaoh's service. And Genesis 41 also tells us that about the years of plenty and such like. So we can probably say that Jacob was probably about 91 years old when Joseph was born. Does that change any of your ideas about what Jacob was like? You ever think about that? We always think, I think, of Jacob as a young man, but we've got to realize that when Jacob was old enough to be married, his father sent him over to the other land to find a wife. And he worked there for 21 years for his wives and for his flocks. He was there for 21 years. I think sometimes we forget the timeline on these kind of things. We think of Joseph as a young boy advising Pharaoh. He's 30 when he starts advising Pharaoh. He's 93 by the time he gets through. Probably he's been through more than one Pharaoh. That's why when we read on in the text, it says, "And then there arose a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph." Because he advised other Pharaohs after the death of the first, most likely. The narrative of Joseph reminds us of something we need to understand. God is always in charge. And that's the rest of the story. God is always in charge. We may not understand how. I'm sure that a 17-year-old boy being cast into a pit by his brothers and sold into slavery didn't understand how that was part of God's plan. I'm positive that a 28, 29-year-old boy, 26 maybe, 25 maybe, year-old boy, young man, being cast into prison for something he did not do, didn't understand how that was part of God's plan. I'm pretty sure that those years rotting away in a prison cell didn't seem to fit into God's plan. I'm sure the cupbearer didn't know that he was actually a part of God's plan. All he thought about was, hey, am I going to die or live? That's all he really cared about. He didn't realize it's part of God's plan. And I know the brothers had no idea that they were fulfilling God's plan when they did the things they did. I know that. But all those things were part of his plan. And I'm sure there were others throughout history that had no idea. Job never knew what he was doing. And so many others. Later on, Jesus is going to meet a man born blind, and they're going to say, Lord, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus is going to say, neither this man nor his parents, but this was done so that you might believe. I'm sure that guy didn't understand that he was born blind to be a part of God's plan. And this morning, I'm sure there's things going on in some of our lives as we sit here together as a congregation that we don't understand, but they're part of God's plan. We don't understand how it's going to work. We don't understand why, and many times we'll ask God, why? Because we don't understand. But Paul assures us that all things work together for good for those who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose, Romans 8 and 28. All things, that's not some things, that's all things. I don't understand all of God's plan of how it's supposed to be. I know that on the night my Lord was betrayed, he prayed in the garden, Father, if it be your will, let this cup pass. Because just because it was part of God's plan didn't mean it was going to be easy. And it doesn't always mean it's going to be easy. but it means God's always got the best in mind for us.